Gopi jana balaba giri badadhari. Gopi jana balaba giri badadhari. Yasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Yamuna tira bana chari. Yamuna tira bana chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Paravachakacharya Sotadas of the Shri Shimana's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BBD Founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Gopemanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 20, entitled Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura. And we're up to text 36.
Naikatra te jayati salini bada padmam. Naikatra te jayati salini pada padmam. Gnantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Gnantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Madhyam visidati brihat stana barabitam. Madhyam visidati brihat stana barabitam. Santeva drishtir amala susika samuha. Sante Vadrishtir Amala Susika Samuha. Naikatra te jayati salini pada padmam. Gantya muhu karatalena patat patangam. Madhyam vasidati brihat stana barabitam. Sante vadrishtir amala susika samuha.
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Na, not. Ekatra, in one place. Te, your. Jayati, stay. Salini, oh beautiful woman. Padapadmam, lotus feet. Gantya, striking. Muhu, again and again. Karatalena, by the palm of the hand. Patat, bouncing. Patangam, the ball. Madhyam, waist. Visiddhati, gets fatigued. Brihat, full grown. Stana, of your breasts. Bara, by the weight. Bitam, oppressed. Santa Eva, as if fatigued. Drishti, vision. Amala, clear. Su, beautiful. Sika, your hair. Samuha, bunch. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O beautiful woman, when you strike the bouncing ball against the ground with your hand again and again, your lotus feet do not touch. Sorry, your lotus feet do not stay in one place. Oppressed by the weight of your full-grown breasts, your waist becomes fatigued, and your clear vision grows dull, as it were. Pray, braid your comely hair. The word comely means attractive, by the way. Purport: The demons observe beautiful gestures in the woman's every step. Here they praise her full-grown breasts, her scattered hair, and her movements in stepping forward and backward while playing with the ball. In every step they enjoy her womanly beauty. And while they enjoy her beauty, their minds become agitated by sex desire. As moths at night surround the fire and are killed, so the demons become victims of the movements of the ball-like breasts of beautiful women. The scattered hair of beautiful women also afflicts the heart of a lusty demon. Om aginata mananda shajananjana shalakaya chakshurin militamyena tasma shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitamyena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam gadati swapadantikam. So here we're hearing the completion of the description of the demon's attempt to seduce the so-called beautiful girl by flattery. It starts off here. They go, "Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as we are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? Whoever you may be, O beautiful girl, we are fortunate in being able to see you. While playing with a ball, you have agitated the minds of the onlookers," and then what I just read today. Now, first thing is, this is not a real woman. It explains, last week when I gave class, Prabhupada clearly stated in the purport that they were imagining. You know, this is the form of twilight, and they imagined it to be a beautiful woman. So it's not a factual woman in front of them, but they're very, very influenced by lusty desires, so much so that they're actually, even though it's not a real woman, they're buying into this thing like, this is real, she's real. So, in the next purport, Prabhupada explains he makes a statement. He says, the asuras are described here as muda diya, meaning they are captivated by ignorance, just like an ass. So that applies, of course, to the asuras, and there's that expression, if the shoe fits, wear it. It applies to anybody. Anybody, to the degree somebody's influenced by this, agitated by this lusty desire, to that degree they're muda diha, which means they are captivated by ignorance and just like an ass. So this lusty desire is a problem. It's a problem. We're hearing about it in relation to the demons here, but it's not like it's something that we don't know anything about, or we don't have any experience with. All conditioned souls, to great and lesser degrees, have a problem with this. So where does it come from in the first place? It's a problem. So let's try to figure out how to deal with it. Well, we might be well advised in our attempt to try to understand how to get free from lust to understand initially, like, what's its origin? Where does it come from? So in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 36, Arjuna inquires about the nature of lust. Ata keno payuktayam yogam charati purusha anichanapi varshneya baladivana yojita. It says, O descendant of Rishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? And then Krishna gives that famous answer. Kama esha kroda esha rajaguna samurbhava mahasano mahapapma vidyanam iahavarinam. That it is a lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and is later transformed into wrath. Yeah, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. So in the purport, Prabhupada, he addresses this issue of where lust comes from in the first place. Prabhupada says, when a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust. And then a little further down in the purport, Prabhupada gives like further insight into exactly how that happens, more information. He says, the Supreme Personality of God had expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They have partial independence. The living entities. They have partial independence. By misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. So in that first sentence we heard about that when the living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust. And that happens when the living entity, by misuse of his independence, allows his service attitude to be transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment. Then you become, captured by lust right at that time. So, so lust is basically this service attitude contaminated by the propensity for sense enjoyment. So now we understand something about where it comes from in the first place. Well, how to get rid of it? How do we get free from lust? That's explained in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada talks about that in the purport. Since we understand now that lust is actually just love of Godhead, but contaminated. It's like, it's not something different. It's not like a separate thing. It's just our love of God contaminated as a result of our allowing our service attitude to deteriorate, to degenerate, and then we become and develop into a propensity for sense enjoyment. So now we have to reverse that process. We have to reverse that process, and we have to elevate that, transform the lust back into love for Krishna. The love has been transformed into lust, and now we have to transform the lust back into love for Krishna. And the way to do that is by bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada says in this 12th chapter, text number 9, he says, Bhakti Yoga is the purification of the senses. At the present moment in material existence, our senses are always impure, being engaged in sense gratification. But by the practice of Bhakti Yoga, these senses can become purified, and in the purified state, they come directly in contact with the Supreme Lord. In material then it goes on to say, explain, love of God is now dormant, is in a dormant state in everyone's heart, and there, love of God is manifested in different ways, but it is contaminated by the material association, which we just heard about, how it gets contaminated by the material association. Now, the heart has to be purified of the material association, and that dormant natural love for Krishna has to be revived. That is the whole process. And Prabhupada gives a very brief description of how that's done. He says, to practice the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga, one should, under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, follow certain principles. One should rise early in the morning, take bath, enter the temple, and offer prayers and chant Hare Krishna, and then collect flowers to offer to the deity, cook foodstuffs to offer to the deity, take prasadam, and so on. That's it. The so on is big. There's a lot of so on. A lot in that, under that so on heading. There are various rules and regulations which one should follow. And one should constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. This practice can help anyone rise to the level of love of God. So Prabhupada strongly advocated it. This process can help anyone rise to the level of love of God, and then he is sure to progress into the spiritual kingdom of God. This practice of Bhakti Yoga under the rules and regulations with the direction of the spiritual master will surely bring one to the stage of love of God. So Prabhupada's strongly advocating Bhakti Yoga as being the solution to the problem of lust. Because by engaging in Bhakti Yoga, you purify the consciousness, and then that dormant love for Krishna, which has now been transformed into lust, will be reverted or reversed back into love for Krishna. And he mentions here is one aspect that I kind of picked up on in that, you know, when he was giving that list of things you should do. One should constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. So I've mentioned this in previous classes, and I'll just briefly mention it again now, but a really nice, easy way to do that, and it's just very practical and pretty much accessible to everybody in this day and age, is you take out your cell phone, which everybody's more or less got, and you go onto Google or whatever your thing is, internet, and you just type in Vani Source, and it'll take you to this website where you can access any and all of Prabhupada's lectures. It's very easy to do, and it's a very nice program. I've been doing it for years now, and you could just start with 1966, and you can listen to the very first thing that Prabhupada recorded, and you systematically work your way right through. You're hearing what does it say? Once you constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees, so that's a surefire application of that instruction. Prabhupada was unquestionably pure devotee, and it's a very simple way to be hearing the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the lectures that he gave, that not all of them, but a lot of them were recorded, the vast majority recorded, and they're right there and easily accessible. All you have to have is a cell phone, access to the internet. If you have some earplugs, all the better, and you're all ready to follow that instruction. So that's important. But somebody might question, well, what do these things have to do with, offering flowers to the deities and cooking? What does that have to do with getting rid of lust? That's something, might sound a little bit unrelated to, in some sense, to somebody, to the uneducated listener. Well, the explanation for that is this. It's in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, texts 10 and 11. Krishna explains who gets his special mercy. And this is very relevant. He says, and these are once again very well-known, common, famous verses. He says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I,
dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, only by devotional service is the supreme truth, Krishna, pleased, and by his inconceivable energy, he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. Okay, so to answer my own question, how it works is that, you know, how do you become free from lust by offering flowers to the deities or cooking for the deities? Krishna's pleased. That's the bottom line. Krishna's pleased. Krishna's got that. The only way our consciousness gets purified is Krishna's got to purify it. It's not like there's some detergent you can go down to Smart and Final and buy to, you know. No, Krishna's in the heart, and he has to be pleased. When he is pleased with our devotional service, he purifies our consciousness. And when your consciousness gets purified, then your, you know, dormant love for Krishna, which is now contaminated by all this lust and everything, becomes revived. So we have to try to please Krishna, please the spiritual master by devotional service. And it's very powerful. I mean, we just already heard in that other purport I read where Prabhupada advocated bhakti yoga is the process to reawaken your love for Krishna. And here, in this purport, he says, due to contamination of material association through many, many millions of births. So that's a lot of births, right? That means that's a lot of contamination, right? Contamination due to, you know, many millions of births. I mean, just imagine an attic that, you know, has been, nobody's gone up to for many, many years. It's going to have a lot of dirt, right? It's going to be very filthy, dusty, you know, stuff coming in from the roof and everything. So many, many millions of births we've been accumulating contamination. And Prabhupada goes on to say, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. So, you know, despite the fact that we've acquired or accumulated contamination through many, many millions of births, Prabhupada's saying here that if we start the process of devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, engaging in devotional service, that dust will quickly clear and will be elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. It says, the ultimate goal of Vishnu can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service and not by mental speculation or argument. So somebody might say, well, I've been doing it, you know, I've been doing devotional service for a while and, you know, still I feel some, I'm not completely free from this lust that you've been talking about, material desire. So what about that? Well, my response to that would be, and I'm addressing myself to, we have to keep trying. You know, you have to keep engaging in devotional service. We have to try to improve our devotional service. And we have to be patient. Nothing else. You know, I mean, the program is there. It's Prabhupada's clearly laid it out. So if we're not experiencing, if we're not like enjoying, tasting the fruit of, you know, mature, elevated devotional service yet, well, we just have to keep going. We have to keep going. As I just said, we have to try to improve our devotional service. Try to look to see, well, maybe am I making any offenses or where can I improve? And then just be patient. You know, something to remember is that the process has worked and is working for many people. You know, we hear about the acharyas and the great devotees from the past. So the process has worked and is working. We could look around the world, even in our own society. There are so many nice examples of devotees who seem to be doing really well in their devotional service. So the process has worked and is working for many people. So why shouldn't it work for us if we kind of stick with it? We just have to stick with it and hang in there. And, you know, we'll get that result. We'll get the desired result. So I will stop there. And if there's a question, yeah, we can take questions. And if we run out of questions, I got two excerpts from lectures I could share with everybody. But we'll do questions first. Dvijamani Gaur had his hand up first, so and I already, and then Rabindranath. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu. It's very encouraging to hear from a senior and accomplished devotee how this process, how Prabhupada laid it out clearly. He didn't put some hidden elements, like you were saying. It's very clear. We just have to remind ourselves and keep applying it. Thank you for that. I wanted to ask about, might sound like a very elementary question, but I wonder about this from time to time. How do I explain to others, and how do I understand for myself that I'm like what it means to be a servant of the senses? Because it really feels like we're using the senses to serve ourselves. But I don't feel like I'm being used by my senses. So how do we understand that?
Okay. Well, in illusion, we're accepting this material body as our self. And actually, we're not this material body. The conscious self is totally separate from the material body. It's kind of now like we're merged. You know, we're in illusion. We're thinking we're this material body. But our real self is we're the eternal servant of Krishna. So when we're using our senses to serve Krishna, then we're serving ourselves. But when we're using our senses to serve the material body, we're kind of in illusion. Does that answer the question? I don't know if I did a good job there. What was the question? Can you run it by me again? Yeah, because that's because you're identifying. Well, if you're engaged in devotional service, then your senses aren't controlling you. Then you're that properly engagement. But if you're engaging your senses in sense gratification, and while doing that you're thinking I'm serving me, then you're in illusion. You're misidentifying your body as who you really are. Like the karmis, for instance, the non-devotees, they think they're serving themselves, but they have a misconception of who they are. They're thinking they're the body. Yeah, so, and they're thinking that by engaging their senses in sense gratification, they're serving themselves. No, they're serving the illusion. They're not serving reality. They're serving illusion. When your senses are engaged in serving Krishna, then you're serving reality. Then you're not serving illusion. That help at all? Okay. What causes the senses to?
Yeah, what's activating my senses if it's not me?
Well, the consciousness is always going on. So if you're not engaged, if your consciousness is not absorbed in devotional service, then it's going to be absorbed in the illusory energy. Well, there's a verse, I quoted this maybe in the last class I gave, in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Nahi kaschit shanam api jatu tishtatiya karmakrit, karyatehi avasha karma sarva pakati jagana, that all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the three modes of material nature. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that unless one is engaged in the good acts of Krishna consciousness, he'll automatically be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. So the illusory energy, I guess, would be the answer. If you're not engaged in Krishna service, then Maya kind of will step in and she'll figure out something for you to do. She'll engage you. Yeah, Ravindranath?
Yeah, you mentioned about how our original love for Krishna was transformed into lust. So would this indicate that we fell down from the spiritual world?
I missed the last part.
So our original love for Krishna transformed into lust. So would this indicate that we fell down from the spiritual world?
That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, I'll just read this thing. It says, the Supreme Personality of God had expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. And the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. I mean, there's probably better references than that, but that and all the other things I've heard Prabhupada say and have read indicate to me that, yeah, we fell down from the spiritual world. And that's the position of our GBC. I mean, you know, they've published papers. Judah Karma published a paper. The GBC published a paper. That's the official philosophical position of ISKCON, that we were in a relationship with Krishna, in the Krishna, Lord Narayan, in the spiritual world, and due to misuse of our free will, we've come to the material world. That's our philosophical position, from what I can understand, unless something's changed recently, which I don't think it has. Does that satisfy you? Does that sound
Thank
correct?
You. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much for your class, which has stimulated a lot of interesting thought. So, along that line, the idea of being a servant of the senses, it doesn't start out that way. You're not a servant to begin with. You're just a taster, or you're just a player, or you're just an experiencer. But what happens is that there's pleasure which comes with that experience. And there is a desire in all living entities to enjoy, to have, to experience pleasure. Because pleasure is what we're seeking. We don't want pain. We want the opposite of that. So, sorry. So, if we want some pleasure, then and the pleasure of some particular object or various objects is there, and we get that pleasure, then we want to repeat it because we want to increase our pleasure. For example, if I have one bit of pleasure within 5 seconds or 10 seconds, that's fine. But I want more. So now I want 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. Soon, I'm thinking often when I will get that pleasure. It starts out with just a few seconds, and it continues to increase and multiply. What happens is that which was just tasting or feeling, thinking something, now has become a habit. When we start to do it often, over and over again, to increase that pleasure more and more, the senses are no longer a servant of the senses. They become a slave. A slave and a servant are not the same. A servant has choice. He can do it or not do it, because that's what makes him a servant. But a slave cannot do what he wants to do. He's under the power, pressure, or direction of the master. And the master has become the sense object. That's the difference. For example, you taste something and then you forget about it. Another person has tasted it 1,000 times, cannot forget about it. He wants more and more and more pleasure. So therefore, that's why we are told to be very careful when we are, so to speak, messing with the senses, enjoying with the senses, because the tendency is to become attached to them. And from attachment comes addiction. And from addiction comes captivation. When we have captivation, we lose our sense of choice, because the pleasure is so provoking, so pulling, that even though we know it's not the best thing for us, nonetheless, the enjoyment or the desire for enjoyment is still there. So the idea is to be free of the desire for enjoyment, which is to cut it as often as we possibly can. In other words, don't get hung up on a particular sense enjoyment, because you may have to pay for it. As soon as you hear of it, as soon as you see of it, you want it. But if you're not addicted to it, you will not want it.
Yeah, thank you. So in the remaining couple of minutes I got from my class, I'd just like to read these, because I have two really nice excerpts.
A little louder, probably.
From Prabhupada, from a lecture he gave. And so this is from a Bhagavad Gita lecture. Prabhupada said, "So this lust is the perverted reflection of my love of God. In my original constitution, I am made to love God. But because I have forgotten God, therefore I love matter. Love is there. Either you love this matter or you love God. But you cannot get out of this loving propensity. Just like sometimes we see one who hasn't got children, he loves a cat, loves a dog. Why? because he wants to love something, but in the absence of reality, he puts his faith in love and love into cats and dogs. So love is there, but that love is now represented in the form of lust. And this lust, when we are baffled in the lust, we become angry, we get wrath, and illusion, etc. So Prabhupada says we have to reverse the process. We should not be lost of all senses influenced by this material lust. We have to reverse ourselves. We have to rectify the lust into love. And if we love God, then it actually says, without loving God, if we want to love something else, that is nonsense. You cannot love. Therefore, we find practically there is so much love between a boy and a girl, and just after 2 years, oh, divorce, go to hell. Because there is no love, it is simply lust. We do not know what is love. Simply, you are playing with lust. And the lust, as soon as you do not satisfy my senses to my satisfaction, then there is anger, wrath, illusion, and etc. So Prabhupada says, basically, there's no love. So anyway, that was, I thought, a very nice kind of overview of the whole thing by Prabhupada there. So I'll stop there. Does anybody? Well, that's it. We already took questions and everything. End of class. Thank you very much. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.